Thanks for listening to The Kick-Ass Life with David Wood. Stay connected on Facebook, / The Kick-Ass Life, on Twitter, at The Kick-Ass Life, and of course, at thekickasslife.com.
This is Andrea Owen, and you're listening to David Wood on The Kick-Ass Life Show.
Kick ass.
Whoa, that's kick ass.
Welcome to the kick ass life.
Adventure.
Want to make your life better?
This is the Kick Ass Life Podcast with David Wood.
Hey, good morning to the ass, Dave.
And Jen.
Jen. So, we're sitting in our house robes, a little white matching house robes. What's this hotel called?
The Pan Pacific.
The Pan Pacific in Perth, which actually, if you're in Perth, you need a great hotel. We've actually really enjoyed this hotel. And the club floor is just really, really, it's just great. You feel, it just do a great service, right?
Correct.
All right, so we're here, we're doing a program. This is the morning of day 3 of a very, very intense program. 360 people have come, and we've had a blast. We were up pretty late last night, though. We went out with all of the staff and till the wee hours of the morning.
Isn't that late?
Well, it was midnight when
midnight.
We got in.
Midnight.
Yeah.
It's reasonable.
Well, yeah. I know when I turned my light off, it was 1:21.
What were you doing?
Well, you know, I do things. Well, I was laying next to you. I wasn't doing anything kind of weird. I was building a Lego castle. All right. Okay. So, let's start with some gratefuls. What are you grateful for today?
I am grateful that I had a special date with a little 9-year-old girl this weekend. We went to the Perth Zoo.
Hold on. Don't just say that again. Well, no, you can tell that story, but you want to tell who the little girl is. So you used to live with a guy here in Perth.
Yeah.
And you raised his daughter.
Yeah.
And so you rekindled that sort of friendship. And so now talk about your special girl. So now they know who you're talking about. Because there's lots of special girls out there, but not one as special as this
She's
one for
very
you.
Very special. Her name is Jasmine, and I haven't seen her for 3 years. And and
that wasn't necessarily your choice.
No.
No. Anyway, that's fine.
Because she lives here in Perth, Australia, and we live in Canada. And anyway, we reconnected, and I picked her up, and we took her to the zoo for the day. And we had the most beautiful, beautiful day. Again, the zoo here in Perth is incredible. If you live here and you haven't gone, you must. We had a beautiful day. And can I play a song for Jasmine?
Let's dedicate the show to Jasmine.
Yay! So this is for Jasmine. And this was her favorite song, which I was so excited to hear because it's also one of mine.
Aww.
For Jazzy.
Now I got the eye of the dog.
Just so you know.
Oh, it makes me want to cry. I love that she loved that song.
Aww.
Yay, Jazzy.
You were so good.
That's my gratitude. Well, I had an opportunity to see her again.
Yeah. My gratitude is for the amazing staff that work with us over here. You know, they bring us over every year. They've already booked us for next year, 2 trips next year. But they so believe in the work we do, and it's so great to be treated. They treat us beautifully. Tomorrow we leave for Thailand.
Yeah.
We're going over there for a little rendezvous. How you say? A little loving, yeah. We're off to Thailand, and then we've got our final program in Australia down on the, where are we going? The Sunshine Coast. Sunshine Coast, where I'm doing a leadership retreat, which is going to be awesome. Apparently, it's so gorgeous, this place we're going to.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm grateful for the staff who just believe in what we do and make it so easy. And they pamper us like crazy. So
we're very well looked after.
Yes.
Lucky us.
All right. Got some questions?
Got some questions. Our first question is anonymous. And it says, how do I get a group of friends? Even the people that have similar interests to me don't seem to want to hang around me all the time. I'm a 21-year-old guy, and I feel like I'm squandering perfect years of camaraderie and friendship with no close friends. I was never the kid invited to sleepovers or birthday parties. I'm lonely and don't want to be. How can you help, David?
Well, you know, this is a big subject. I think a lot of people are lonely for different sets of reasons. Friendship is an interesting journey. And the journey of friendship, I think it starts, you know, I always say everyone's waiting for somebody else to go first. And as a 21-year-old, there's a good chance that you've got into, I don't know who you are, but I can guess by the way you've written that, you know, that you haven't had a plethora of friends through school. And like you said, you haven't been invited to things. And that can be, you know, there's this idea of friendship and what it really is. And as a young kid, a few things can happen in sequence where we start to lose the confidence to be a friend and to initiate friendship. So we'll sort of start to get quieter. We go into social settings and we wait for it to happen. We're looking for it to happen. We wait for it to happen. Of course, it's not going to happen because the longer we stay on the outside, the more we're on the outside. But you also talk about having friends. It's not like you don't have any friends. I think it's just the friends you have are not sharing the same interests. And as you evolve and grow, and especially as you're listening to a show like this, you know, you're going to evolve and grow and you're going to expand. And one of the things I had to do as I was not a kid who had a lot of friends either. I had two friends really at school, Gary and Brian. And we were mates, and then they separated us. We got into so much trouble at the middle school, they separated us at the high school, and we stopped being friends because we never saw each other. But, you know, I just didn't have a lot of friends. I was never that kid that had, you know, I wasn't gregarious, and I certainly, socially or economically, we were quite different from a lot of the kids at the school. So I think that what I've learned about friendship is first of all, you've got to go first. And I would say that just start with a clean slate. But you've got to live an extraordinary life. To have extraordinary friends, I say, you know, to find them, start doing things that you're passionate about. That you're not going to find them at home. And you may find some on the internet. I don't know if you're a computer game player, but I mean, again, that's not a real relationship where you're meeting up, you're hanging out, you're going to do stuff. But if you join a sports team or volunteer or spend time around people, you know, do things where it forces you to be around people. And then, you know, the idea that there's a lot of things you can be doing, maybe some passions you have, maybe you, you know, playing in a band if you love music, but there's a lot of things you can do by following your passion, something you're passionate about. Now, quite often people that are lonely don't do a lot of things either because they get more and more reclusive. So they sort of spend more and more time alone, and then the television becomes, you know, the void, or the computer becomes the void. All right. So you go, first of all, get out the house. And then go and do something that really you're passionate about. And then the idea of how do you create friendship? In the beginning, when you don't know someone, first of all, you've got to get in the habit of saying hello to more people. And then being a great listener. They will say, you know, you have two ears and one mouth because you should listen twice as much as you speak. Asking great questions. But if you were to draw two circles on a sheet of paper right now, so take one circle and draw the other circle, and in the center, they overlap. And you shade in that overlapped area. Let's call that common ground. So the big white space of your circle, let's say your interests are, or you don't have a lot of interest because you don't do a lot. I mean, again, I'm not sure of your life story, but let's say you have interest and your interests are dogs, right? And the other person's interest is computers, dogs and computers, right? But in that center part that's shaded in, you can find things that you have in common. And maybe that you have an interest in computers, or maybe you both love, mountain climbing, or you both love hiking, or you both love biking, or something like that. The important part of a friendship is when you discover, and especially early on when we're building them, you discover what you have in common, because as soon as you find common ground, and my son Calvin's like that, he has a lot of girlfriends, doesn't have a lot of guy friends. But I watch what happens when he starts talking to a guy around the subjects he loves. It's like, ah, you know, but a lot of the time, because
he's rah,
he's talking to He's talking a lot, right? And he's lit up and he's engaged and he's passionate and all those things come out, you know. But a lot of the time he'll sit quietly and he's not the guy that's going to go and sit in the center of all the action, you know. And so it's really, really interesting. So we have to, you know, have eye contact, ask great questions, find common ground, you know, and then be selective. I mean, you know, it's a muscle that you'll build, and you want great friends in your life. And so I have to just get rid of all the people in my life when I started to grow and find a whole new set of friends of people who are passionate, who are driven, who enjoyed life, who really wanted to dream and dream big dreams and go out and get them. So I have a whole new set of friends. There are no friends from my childhood, not one that I know. I mean, Jen, you know that. I have no friends. I mean, all my friends are people I met in Canada and some people I've met on my travels over the years. But my real friends are the people in the last, you know, I've been here, what, 30 years, are all in this region, 25 years, I think, I've been here. So what do you think of that, young lady?
Yeah, I think I've had a similar journey as well. And, you know, friends come and go as I've done different things in my life. And, you know, I've always been a kind of person that had a few very close friends rather than a large group of friends. And I know my younger siblings, some of them are the same way. And I think that it's important that you find those one or two really close, good friendships, because they seem to last the longest. They have for me, anyway. Whereas you have this large group of friends, then it just becomes superficial friendships, which can be fun if you're going out with a big group. But, you know, cherishing the relationships I have had, they've, you know, even my childhood friend, Cindy Hewitt, I still hold this place in my heart for her. Becky Scott and Jenny Borg and all these people I grew up with when I was very little. They're not in my life anymore. We've reconnected because of Facebook. But, you know, I think, you know, cherishing those few relationships I do have and really flourishing them. But I do love your advice of making sure that you make an effort to get out and do the things that you love, find the things that you're passionate about, and spend more time doing those things, because that's when you'll run into people with similar interests and new friendships will flourish from that.
And friendship, again, remember, friendship is an effort. There's an effort in there that you really want to have. But manage your expectations. Don't think because you initiate something that someone's going to reciprocate. You have to stay in touch. You know, you want to be loyal. You want to find reasons. Hey, and throw a party. If you don't get invited a lot, have a party yourself. Start being someone that initiates things. And we throw a lot of parties. And I'm fortunate. I do have a lot of good friends. But I think that I'm the kind of friend that someone doesn't see for 2 years. And when I see them, it's like I've never been away. It's like I can walk into someone's life like I'll walk right into their fridge and start opening the fridge. If I haven't seen it, I never had that awkward bit. Oh, I haven't seen you for 9 months. I just walk up, give him a big kiss, sit down. It's like we start right over from where we last left off. But I'm not a big initiator. Love, you know, I can go months or even years without contacting some of my friends, right?
Yeah. And they understand that about you. Because I have friends like that too. I think we get it. We understand. Like here, we saw some of my friends in Perth I haven't seen for over a year.
Yeah.
And we just hang out like I saw them yesterday.
That's right. Beautiful. True. Anyway, I hope that helps. So don't forget the Goya principle. Get off your ass.
Yeah. Pardon me.
Ooh, cough.
Next question's from Jenny.
Hello, Jen.
She says, hi, Jen and Dave. I have a question about teenagers.
Oh, gosh. Well, just this is the disclaimer, ladies and gentlemen. This is the disclaimer. You know, Mr. Word doesn't really know much about teenagers. He has two of them, and he's as whacked out as everyone else.
Uh-oh, our phone is ringing. Ignore that. Jenny says, I'm blessed to have four teenage daughters, two of which are stepdaughters.
First of all, drink a martini.
She says, yes, my partner is a wonderful man and copes well with so many females around. Oh, my goodness, the poor man. My question is, how can I educate the girls to have an attitude of responsibility? I'm reading Brian Tracy's Power of Self-Discipline, and I understand the power behind saying, I am responsible. But how can I pass this on to the girls? They're so quick to blame a phone for the alarm not going off and the bed for stubbing their toe.
Well, something I learned about my kids is that they kind of mirror me. And it's probably most kids' behavior is learned. So they, you know, I don't know if you have in the past or your husband or people that are around, you know, can blame things. But I do think that teenagers are a challenge, and I'm no expert, but I will bring an expert, more experts on in this area. What I'm learning about being a father of teenagers is I just have to back up. you know, these kids are going to work it out, but I need to live an extraordinary life in front of them and be the person, be the change that I want to see in the world. And it will rub off. But as long as we put them under a microscope, I think they'll rebel and they'll do the opposite things because they're trying to find their voice. And if you look at the history of music, look at Bob Dylan or, you know, the Beatles, you look at any of these bands, when they came out, why there was this, you know, this fever, these teenagers that would stream out onto the streets, you know, because it was their way of rebelling and saying, look, we have our own voice, we have our own world, you know, and so sometimes as parents, depending on the type of relationship we have with our kids, and I've got two very different kids and two very different relationships, and what I'm realizing is that when I'm closest, Cal and I, my eldest son and I, we sort of bashed heads quite a bit. People all say, you know, we're very similar. You know, but what I realize is that whenever I'm trying to control him, or if I'm my spotlight is focusing on him and what I think he should be doing, right? His best self doesn't ever show up. And when his best self shows up is when I'm just chilled and I'm focused on living life and seeing his greatness and working with the bits that are working. But I think that if you know, the kids will model. Even I think I watch my kids go through different phases. And I suppose every parent out there, and it's easy to compare kids too. You know, I watch kids and some parents have these, you know, certain types of kids and certain types of, I go, wow, you know, and I've got, my kids are edgy, right? And they're going to be in your face and they don't always say the right thing. And I know deep down in my heart, because I work with so many adults, that the most important thing for your kids to understand, any kid to understand, is to look in the mirror and love their own imperfection, and to grow up loving themselves for who they are, how they are, not our interpretation of how they should be. And so even if they do blame the bed, right, you know, does it, in the end of the day, does it matter? But we kind of want things for our kids that they got to want it for themselves. But you can be that person. And I would suggest that, you know, you start focusing around your kids on being the person that you want to be in the world, and that will rub off, and let them be their person, let them grow into the person they want to be. Because this is sage advice for someone that struggles with this, right? Because I mean, I struggle. It's very, very quick. You know, especially if you have a kid that does something, you know, because your RAS is programmed, the reticular activating system of your brain is programmed to notice the shit they're doing wrong, right? And so, you know, so it's easy to start noticing it. And you watch parents all the time when they're out with their kids, you know, the helicopter parents, and every time their kid starts to do something, the parent will start to notice and control, because their kid's out in front of the public, so they want the kid to behave in public in a certain way. So as soon as the kid starts veering off that rail, then the parent jumps right in and starts pushing them back onto the rail, which starts that whole, you know, hey, when you're in public, wear a mask, be this way, act a certain way, there's only one way to act. Whereas some of the kids that I see are really, really healthy and healthy in their own hearts and have this real love relationship with themselves, and there's very few you see like that, by the way, are the kids whose parents really aren't helicopters. They're not over them all the time. They're allowing them to find their way. But, you know, obviously having strong lines in the sand, you know, but the box is quite big. They're not living in a tiny box. There is things. There is respect. There is ways of treating people. There are, you know, pleases and thank yous. There is, you know, respect for the home and contribution at home. But there's a bigger box where mistakes can be made, and it's not this constant battle of control, which I think is where kids will rebel. And relationships between parents and kids are strained. And how many times, I was one of these kids that hated my parents. I left home because I was controlled. And sadly, you know, I picked up a lot of control issues. So I can be a little bit controlling of my kids, you know, and I see it doesn't pay. So even though I'm giving you sage advice, just understand that I struggle myself with certain things my kids do. And what I ask myself deep down inside is just to back up. And the one thing I'll tell you know, my kids come and do some of my programs with me. And the happiest times we've ever had, the closest times we've ever had, and Jen's been at a number of these programs where my kids are in the audience, is when I stop treating them like my kids. Mm-hmm. And I just treat them like one of the audience members, and I back away. And their brilliance always shows up. Their magnificence always shows up. People come up to me, wow! You know, and as soon as I back away from them and don't control their space, you know, they just step out and they glow. You've seen that, right?
Absolutely, yeah. What about making light of, you know, because I know when us women, and we're teenagers, and our hormones are crazy out of control. Sometimes we turn little things into big things, and we
don't think so seriously. You don't.
I remember slamming my bedroom door and, you know, stomping up the stairs and being such a drama queen. And instead of my parents getting...
And I only stopped like a week ago.
Oh, stop. Instead of, you know, thinking there's a lesson from that, but making light of it and maybe just having a little giggle over an overreaction. What?
Well, no, absolutely. But again, you know, you see that. I mean, it's using humor can actually work. But again, I think you bring up a great point with girls. I mean, the hormone thing, and watching my boys go through their hormones, you know, and Cal, you know, had really, really bad acne. And I mean, how do you feel walking out the house with your face full of spots? You know, I mean, there's a lot going on within the body, and, you know, the hormones they don't understand, and puberty and all, and then you peer pressure at school. It's like, holy moly, you know, growing up is a tough thing. And I, again, if I could rewind the clock, and I don't have any regrets whatsoever. But I'm constantly thinking these days. In fact, I was thinking it yesterday when I was on stage, because I watched, you know, 360 people and see what people are going through and how many people lack self-worth and self-love.
Yeah.
You know, I think, geez, you know, I'm so invested in the idea of becoming a great friend with my kids, as being the person they can confide in. And Cal came in and asked for advice the other day, right?
Yeah.
To break up with a girl, you know. And it was so great for him to and I to sit. And he really wanted me to help him through this really difficult time. And for me to drive him down there and be his moral compass, and him taking the advice and doing what he... And so that told me something, even though we do have, like, bash heads, that, you know, that it's all going to work out. And just love them. Love them for who they are. And they may be very different from you. And that's a hard thing. You know, it's a whole personality thing, how they're wired. And I taught on that last night, you know. If you have a certain wiring and your motive for the way you live your life is power... Well, there's four primary motives: fun, power, intimacy, and peace. And if your kid's wired around power and you're wired around peace, or your kid's wired around power and you're wired around fun, or what it is, whatever combination, when you're wired differently from your kids, it's so easy to not understand them. It's so easy to truly be disappointed in them all the time. You know, that's why so many men have wounds from their father. Because, you know, you have a father who's a fiery, we call it a red personality, who's all about power and winning and leading teams. And they've got a son who's all about peace and tolerance, you know, like Gandhi, and doesn't want to play sports, not interested in sports. So the father looks at him like he's an alien and treats him like crap his whole life, not even deliberately or overtly, but just disappointment. And that wound in the kid's heart, it'll stay there until they start doing work later on, right? So...
I think the other thing I'm thinking about is that, you know, to love our kids as that, you know, through their teenage years, and to trust that what we're teaching them, it may not show up right now, but trust that it will show up later. Because I think we're seeing that with Ben and Cal, as we're trying to show an example or, you know, teach them these lessons, yet we don't necessarily see right away that they're hearing us, but they are. It's in there somewhere. And then, you know, maybe a year later, we're like, oh! We're surprised by a behavior.
Sure.
And just loving them through this tough time.
Awesome. A little bit of love. Sounds like we should have a song.
Yeah, it's time for some music. And we have a special request from Sylvain Langer. This is dedicated to his lovely girlfriend who made him discover this awesome band. This is... Within... Temptation.
Oh, nice. That's nice of Sylvain, that she embedded the song right in the question. So whereas a little music video with it. So yeah. We're watching the music video as we're playing this, Sylvain.
Super easy. That was so
super.
Easy.
You are super. Super, 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 super.
So Sylvain says, love your show. It's awesome and so inspiring. Special thoughts for Dave's advice on money. I'm reading Rich Dad, Poor Dad by Robert Kiyosaki, and it's so powerful. Thanks for the advice. Yay! Sylvain says, I'm a scuba diver and I love when Dave talks about his experience. So my question will be, what's the most magical and jaw-dropping dive with undersea animals you've ever made?
Well, you know, it's really funny because I always think I've sort of reached a nirvana of diving, and then I have another dive and I find something else. But recently, let me talk about one of my special dives recently was diving for Jen's first dive, and my son Benjamin got certified in diving. So I had Ben in the water doing his open water dive, and I've got Jen in the water who's just doing a resort course. So now I'm in the water with two people I love, and it was awesome. You know, Jen saw a shark as soon as she got in the water. Nursing shark, you people who are freaky about this stuff. But it was a nursing shark. You know, there's very few things that are going to hurt you in the water apart from ignorance. But if I think back, there was a couple of dives that stand out. One recently from our island, Thatch Key, which is, it's in a UNESCO World Heritage Site and a marine sanctuary. And the diving off the island is extraordinary. And there are two cuts into the outer reef, which means that, you know, it's, from our island, it's very, very easy to get into some exceptional diving, both shallow diving and deep water diving. And this particular dive, we went out, and I really didn't have a whole lot of expectation. And this was last November, late in November. And we go out into the water, and I'm there with Chico, and we have about three of my students with, actually, there will be four of our students with me. And when we're in the water, I was mesmerized to the point where my regulator, the thing I breathe through for you non-divers, all right, almost kept falling out of my mouth because, I mean, I when we came to the surface, we talked about how many fish do you think we saw on this particular dive? And, you know, honestly, 300,000-500,000 fish. And we saw everything, you know, and there were different massive shoals of fish all around us the whole time. And the light was coming through the surface of the ocean. And it was just hitting the water in such a unique way that they had these prisms of light everywhere. There were these fish everywhere. And, you know, and I had a woman with me who was quite nervous because there was a lot of, so I had her arm. And so I'm linked arms with someone. And I've always loved when I'm diving with someone and I can really be of help and really, really serve someone underwater, because it can be scary for the first couple of times, right? So I've got this woman's arm there, and we're in this just plethora of fish.
Plethora.
And then we go over this shark. It's about 12 feet long. No, maybe not. Maybe 9.5 feet long. With your mask, sometimes it'll look bigger. But we went right over the top of it. It was sleeping on the bottom, nursing shark. And that was amazing. And then, you know, as we looked around, I mean, it was, you couldn't see anything but the dancing of fish in the light of the thing. And I thought at this moment, I thought, wow, you know what would be great right now is to see a turtle. And suddenly this massive turtle, I mean, I'm talking about one of the biggest turtles I've ever seen, came swimming through all these fish and swam right between us. And I was able to just put my hand out and I just ran my hand over the turtle shell.
What?
It just came so close.
No.
Absolutely. And so, and there was everything. We saw absolutely everything that you'd want to see underwater in one dive. But it was more the magic of this, of the surprise of it. I had no idea it'd be like this. And Chico, the dive master, and myself, and we'd look at each other, and he's motioning to me like, what's going on? It's like the tide had to be right for this to happen. You know, the exact time of day for this to happen. And the thing that went through my head was, this is what it must have been like 10,000 years ago. That's what I had, this overriding feeling of what this experience was like. And another dive was off the, I used to work as a diving instructor in Roatan, which is off the west coast of Honduras. And there was a dive called the Crack. And what happened was, you sort of go down to about 20 feet from the boat, and there's a crack in the ocean floor, and you kind of almost have to go down kind of feet first into this crack. And you go down, and there's all this, you know, coral that's kind of dancing, and you know, you're not touching it, but it's pretty close to you. And you're kind of like having a trust about this dive, because you can't, you know, you're going down a funnel, and it comes out into a very, very long cave. And so you're now down about 35, 40 feet, and this cave is quite large, but again, full of coral, and you can see the light of the ocean at the end of it. And you came out, and you sort of dove down. And as you're diving down through this coral in this tunnel, it's just a very, very beautiful experience. And it comes out on this wall, and you come out about 110 feet. And so now you're in a deep dive on this absolute amazing wall, and one of the great wall dives. And remember, that whole barrier reef area, I mean, it's the second largest barrier reef in the world. But these wall dives out down there are spectacular. And I just remember just being mesmerized the whole time. A little bit of anxiety, you're going into the crack of the ocean, and then this incredible adventure as you're going through the tunnel, and then this awe-inspiring feeling as you come out on the wall. It was just, wow! Awesome.
Wow, that's amazing. also suggest that we, for all the divers out there, to watch a documentary called The Blue Planet by the BBC. So we'll put that in the show notes.
Yeah, we'll put it in the show notes. Thanks there, Sildan. Nice stuff. Good question.
All right, next question is from Hugh Culver.
Hugh. Hey, you guys, Hugh, just to let you know, this is one exceptional human being. Author, he's a trainer, he's a teacher, he's a coach, and really, really good at what he does. And I just know that he's just one of these high integrity people. And if you ever get a chance to work for him, I'll work with him, go do it. He does some amazing things with people and really allows them to step into their gifts and their dreams and passion. So there's a little plug for you.
Oh, Hugh! Hugh's asking, David, I'm curious how you run your business while on the road, especially when you have scheduled podcasts to maintain. And, second question, how can I be so darn good looking as you?
Well, first get your eyes tested. Obviously, there's a problem there. Jen, when she read that question, I wasn't reading the questions, but I heard her as she was preparing for the show, and she said, what, he's good looking? All right. So, yeah, Hugh, hey, by the way, I know your trip to Everest is coming up, to the Himalayas, so good luck with that. The whole show thing, four shows a week, and especially in a different time zone, like right now, you know, we were up really, really late on stage all day yesterday, but, you know, the show must go on. So, I mean, I set my alarm earlier and I make it happen, and it's just a priority for me. And one thing, you know, obviously it's a little more challenging when you talk about running the business. Well, obviously when I'm away here, part of my business is training. So I have three events here while I'm here, and they'll, you know, they're part of what I do. I do obviously have an assistant, and who looks after the things that, you know, the things that are coming for the future. But I what I've learned, Hugh, which is more important, is I've been really a bit of a lone wolf for a long time in business, because, you know, I've grown large companies, and I didn't want to take the responsibility on of growing another large company and being responsible for employees. So I've just recently hired a business manager, Casey, and we're, you know, hiring a whole team. I'm working with some branding experts right now, because I do want to take it to a global level, and have, you know, an impact on a whole new level, you know, on a massive scale. And I know to do that, I'm going to have an exceptional team around me. So, I mean, we have some people in the wings right now who are helping out. People I've met on the show, to be honest. A lot of people have contacted me with their gifts and told me they'd like to be involved in what we're doing. So Casey and Kirsten, and, you know, we're working with a team of people right now. So there's going to be about 25 people helping us, and these branding experts. So, you know, it's one thing where I feel that, you know, creating a tremendous business structure that is well-oiled and with a team of passionate individuals that really want to do good in the world is really the future. But right now, it's just a question of digging deep and making sure I make it a priority every day, and, you know, getting up early and staying up late and still doing what I came here to do and enjoying to do it as a part of our day. You know, it's one thing is when you're doing something that you're passionate about, and the show is I'm very passionate about, it's very, very easy to jump out of bed and do stuff with no sleep and, you know, maybe give up some things that you want to do and you can't do. And it was a choice last night. Do we come back to the room and record, or do we? And I know the show is going to be up late because I just heard from the producer right now who says, you know, actually, I'm just out for the day. So when I upload this, because of the time zone difference, this probably won't come up till Sunday now, which is a shame, but it's just one of those things. It happens, right? But, you know, that's the price you pay sometimes when you're in a different part of the world. Now, I mean, there a lot of people automate their shows and they come out automatically. I'm not that organized. Also, well, it's not that. It's just I don't want to pre-record the shows. I like recording the shows in the moment. The fact that this is what's happening in this moment. So I could have pre-recorded 10 shows before I left, and they're all in the can. But I think it misses what's really going on in our lives. And I think that that is as important, because I'm changed. Like last week's show, which is all about, you know, an apology and learning how to say sorry, was, you know, brought up because of something that was going on in my life that was massive, and, you know, I was going through some stuff myself. And that show wouldn't have existed if I hadn't have listened to what's going on. What do I want to talk about today? So Anyway, Hugh, again, exceptional. We should spend more time. We live in the same town, so I think we should get out for a beer before you go to Everest. So thanks so much.
Absolutely. Next question is from Tori Lee Longy Dennis.
Tori Lee Longy Dennis.
Hi, Dave and Jen. First, I want to thank you for all you do and who you are. You have truly changed my life for the better, and I'm so thankful for it. Isn't that nice? My question is, how do you juggle family and a career? It's interesting. I have a new baby, and all I want to do is be with her. But I also have a career in the medical field, and I don't want to give it up, and going part-time isn't an option with the company.
Well, you know, two things. When you're in that situation, you know, look at what you want. You want to be with your baby. We're just looking at a photograph of your baby, by the way.
Is it cute, baby? Oh,
little cutie.
Great photo.
He's got a bald head like me. but your family looks amazing. You know, I always say, Tori, is that we have to make choices. And if something were to happen to you, that maybe a health question and you don't know how long you've got, we always assume that there's going to be this long time. So your heart's yearning to be with your child, your new baby. And every fiber of your body is telling you that, but you may be, maybe it's a financial decision that you can't leave work. Maybe it's because you're just, again, really passionate about what you do, but the work doesn't offer you the options to go part-time, which is maybe what you would do. Then you have to make some calls, right? What am I going to do? Am I going to give up work and find somewhere else to work? Am I going to quit work altogether and we'll struggle with my husband's wage? Or am I going to find a replacement for this where I can work at home? And that's why I teach so many people. And I love to mentor you if you're interested. Anyone out there who would like to be mentored on how to create a strong residual income where you can stay at home and have choices. Where you can travel the world, do what you want, live passionately, spend every minute you want with your baby and build a dynasty where you can eclipse your current income. Then, you know, those are true choices. And we've helped lots and lots and lots of women do that, where they, you know, they now out-earn their husbands by significant amounts of money, even retire their husbands, and they're free to travel with their family, you know, free to be with their family, free to grow themselves and live in a whole new world that's passionate, it's exciting, it's open, it's surrounded by nutcases like me, and we've had a lot of people who've contacted us from the show, and we've become really good friends with, you know, and they're in our lives and they're growing something that will give them the freedom you're looking for. It's not for everyone, but it sounds like it's right for you. And, you know, there is a better way. There's a better way. And we don't have to be imprisoned by jobs. We don't have to make choices to be away from our family. But most people don't know that exists. And Jen, you know, you just retired from your work doing exactly this, mm-hmm. building a residual income where now you have complete freedom. How does that feel?
Freedom is amazing. I had no idea there was another way. And I've even struggled in, you know, since January when I left my job with the idea of, you know, the security of having that job, because I knew it worked and I thought I was happy before, but now I'm realizing there's a whole other world out here, and, you know, to have the freedom to travel and not have a ceiling on how much I earn and to be working with beautiful people and helping them in a way I never thought I could help. It's just been incredible to realize that, yeah, there's so much more than my J-O-B, even though I loved it and was passionate about my work and got a lot of fulfillment from it. It's, you know, now I'm just, it's just a whole other level.
Yeah, I mean, and really, I mean, even financially, you know, you're in a place where, you know, even if you worked every single hour, first you'd come home as a registered massage therapist, and, you know, working with that elite athletes, you'd come home exhausted with, you know, sore arms and sore back from massaging 8 people a day, which was really, really hard, working in a cubicle with no windows because people don't want to be massaged out in the open air, apart from Tom Budd, at the tennis court. Well, you do that sometimes.
That's a sports massage.
Yeah. No. But what I'm saying is that, you know, your income right now is over double what you used to earn, mm-hmm. And I mean that's remarkable. But you look at how much you've grown as a person and as a leader. I mean, you're leading a team of people right now. that's inspirational, and the relationship you have with them. I think of Karen, and who listens to the show all the time, and Paula and Sanj and Chelsea, all people you met on the show.
Yeah.
And now, who did we speak
They're
to yesterday?
They're becoming my closest friends.
Yeah,
right?
Albert.
And Albert, come on board.
Awesome landscape architect, from Florida, who just got on board with us, and we're just looking forward to really having these friendships, and that's what it's all about, is finding people who are like-minded. Going back to our first question, like-minded people who want to link arms together and dream together big dreams, and this is my expertise, so I'm fortunate to be an expert in an arena where I can help people really learn and grow into it, and their income can be whatever they want, but certainly choices, having choices. People say, well, how do you live such a great life? Well, I make the choices because I've designed a life. And it is a life by design. So with that being said, we're at 37 minutes.
I make friends for a living.
I got to be on stage real soon.
Oh, well, there's one last.
Oh, let's do the last question then, quick. This is from Suzelle Nolte. She says, Jen, when will you start your own show? I love listening to your laugh. David, you're all right, too. Like, LOL. Thanks for keeping up, though, through house moving, international visits. Can we have more relationships experts on? So, Jen, when are you starting your own show?
No, I'd love to have my own show. Thanks for mentioning. Should my show just be me laughing?
Yeah. Oh, do a little laughter track.
Laughter yoga.
Come on, let me hear a little laughter. Come on, and go.
For Halloween.
Okay, we should see it right now. All right.
We better run. So
we gotta run. I gotta go get on stage.
See you on the
other side. You're a nutcase.
That was kick-ass.